Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. With me today is reporter Derek Gillum from the Sarasota Herald Tribune. He recently wrote an investigative piece that appeared in our Sunday edition of the Herald Tribune. And I love the title, Developers Have the Inside Track. Thanks so much, Derek, for being with me today.
Yeah, well, I don't write the headlines, so I typically just
Yeah.
write the stories. I don't really have much influence on what headlines actually get on the page at that time. So,
Yeah, I know people, yeah, I'm familiar with that, but many people aren't. That's an important point. And a lot of times headlines online are different from what appears in print, which is the case with this story. But Derek, you basically uncovered what a lot of us have absolutely known or suspected to be true about prominent developers in Sarasota County and their relationship with the Sarasota County planning staff. Why don't we kick it off by talking about, because a lot of people, I'd say overdevelopment is one of the main concerns of people who lived here. I've lived here since 1999, seen a ton of change. Why don't you tell us a little about yourself, how long you've lived here, and what kind of reporting have you done? We'll start there.
So I moved here in the summer of 2021. I am the real estate reporter for the Sarasota Herald Tribune. And the beat I cover is obviously real estate and business. I have written stories about the housing market, about what's happening in rents, what's happening on median home price, but also I cover development and projects that are being built or being proposed and kind of their impact on the area. It definitely has been a flashpoint, as you mentioned. It's I would say one of the top topics in the community. It's an interesting topic because you do have I can see it from both sides somewhat. And you mentioned, uncovering. I bet if you talk to Pat Neal or Bill Merrill or any of the other influential land use planners in town, they would say that what I uncovered is routine emails that they, send. Just, that they, they, in my story, I point out that they are a highly regulated industry. They have to, communicate with, government to make sure they're in line with the regulations. I think my story showed they were not just talking about current regulations, but trying to influence or at least guide local leaders to make a choice that benefits them over what maybe neighbors to the property would rather have or see developed. But, I would say that my beat is pretty much trying to just watch what happens and kind of, report on what I see happening on the real estate development front. So,
Which
and
is a major industry in Florida, certainly in Sarasota. One of the things what I focus on in my show is basically local government and how important it is. Every land use decision is pretty much a local decision, and that is where your city commissions and your county commissions are critical. If you care about the environment, those land use decisions are key, and they're essentially local decisions. Of course, the state has some oversight, but we've actually seen that dwindled. I find it interesting, though. Of course, those who are engaged in this communication with county staff want to characterize it as routine and customary and no big deal, nothing to see here. But just because something is routine or customary doesn't necessarily make it ethical or wise when it comes to where the citizen, where the public interest is. You know, it can bleed over into catering to special interests, which I know is what a lot of people in the community are concerned about. And I've certainly shared that viewpoint over the years. So, Derek, that actually is a really huge topic for you to be covering in Sarasota County. It's a lot of work. And we know that local news teams aren't as well resourced nearly as they used to be. We know that there are fewer people where there might have been two or three or four or five people covering this topic before. It's pretty much you now, right? In
For the Herald Tribune, we do recognize growth and development and real estate and as a important beat. And we actually have, I cover real estate and development, as well as another reporter whose sole focus is growth and development. Her name's Heather Bushman. She did a lot of the stuff on the 3H ranch that we just reported. And I think she's doing a great job and learning the beat and exactly what, how to cover it. And I think she's doing a great job at what she does. So we do have two reporters here covering solely growth and development. And then honestly, if you think about what we also have a county reporter, a county city reporter, his name's Christian Casal, and he also covers growth and development issues because, like you said, these are local decisions where the decision is made at the county or the city commission. And then Jesse Mendoza, while he is the Manatee County reporter, he also covers it from a growth and development perspective. I oftentimes, so we actually have a number of reporters at what I believe to be one of the most important beats in this community. Growth and development, we actually do have a number of people covering it.
That's great. That's
My,
encouraging.
yeah.
So I'm going
Yeah.
to ask you, let's talk about how did you get into this particular article? You document a very some would say cozy, but certainly lots of contact between prominent developers and their attorneys or representatives and county staff. How did you get into this story? Did somebody suggest it to you? Did you read another, what was the impetus to look at this?
Yeah, so obviously, development of hotels on Siesta Key has been a hot button topic for at least since I got here. I got here in 2021, the summer. It was very obvious that the residents of Siesta Key did not support, and removing protections that they felt they had enshrined. And, there's something called an overlay district, so the Siesta Key Overlay District or SCOD. And, that right there was a big issue. Obviously, Lourdes Ramirez sued the county over the Lourdes Ramirez, as well as a condominium association and Robert Sachs on Siesta Key sued the county regarding those decisions. And so as that decision, as that court case played out, I was obviously writing stories about the court case, writing stories about what the process was going through there. And then in August of 2023, Circuit Judge Hunter Carroll sided with Lourdes and the other residents of Siesta Key that their protections should have been in place. That they're
That
that
they were. I mean, they
right.
basically, I would say in my watchdog time, right, since 2008, one of the things that has been kind of jaw-dropping is just watching the county flat out violate their own laws and policies. And that is essentially what the court found here.
Yeah, I mean that's what Carroll sided with them, citing, comp plan or is
1989.
future. Yeah, it was the future land use policy 2.9, 2.9.1, which was about not increasing and intensity or density levels that are set in 1989. So that right there happens in August, and then in October we, I believe it was October. I'd have to go back and look exactly on the timeline, but there was a county attorney's memo that was laying out what they needed to do to come back in compliance with the comp plan, and in that they mentioned a legislative fix in that memo.
And
So
you came to know about that memo?
that memo was on the agenda, but then
Okay.
so I put in, and then another reporter with the newspaper called, well, a online publication called the Siesta, or I'm sorry, the Sarasota News Leader, and it's run by a woman named Rachel Brown Hackney. She put in, she had a story about these three privately initiated comprehensive plan amendments that were being, you know, discussed at the county, and she received that through her public records request. So I saw that story, and I actually reached out because I ended up with her public records request with, you know, certain hotel developers and their representatives, along with, you know, any communication they had at the county for basically a year, and from January 3rd to like October 16th of 2023. And in that, it, you know, it sweeped up a lot of other records because she, you know, it was all types of communications. It wasn't just Siesta Key. It was stuff about High Hat Ranch. It was stuff about all these other projects that these developers were working on. And it was, we describe it as like a flood of communication. And it truly lays out kind of the behind the scenes workings of how some of these projects get approval. And I at the time, this was late 2023, I reached out to Rachel because I got her records request, and I was like, hey, I see that, you know, you requested all this stuff. There's some really interesting emails in here in January, and there's also some stuff. It looks like they were working behind the scenes well before, you know, the well before the public was ever aware that there was going to be another attempt at the Siesta Key Hotel projects.
So they were basically anticipating defeat legally.
I mean, the emails are, I mean, maybe, I mean, I
Well,
believe you're probably right, but I, with
yeah,
the
my guess.
emails are
I'm going to say
basically.
it's my guess. And you know what? I should say the opinions expressed here are the opinions of me and you, and not necessarily WSLR or our affiliates or supporters. But you know, it, just having watched some of what's gone on legally, or even, you know, you take the Beach Road amendments that Mike Cosentino put together that passed a referendum just overwhelmingly, like 70%, and the county was ready with legal strategy to basically somehow make it as if the voters never said a word. I mean, the Beach Road is gone in the place where it was supposed to be protected. So they were, you saw emails where there were already, shortly after that defeat in August of 2023, they were on another path to make hotels on Siesta Key happen. Is that fair to say? Yeah.
And I think even more so that I'm not sure if in my story, I it was it's you know, I think it, the story reads very well, it kind of flows, but there was parts where I could have, like, you know, it was hard to talk about fully, because while at the same time as they're talking about this, you know, meeting with what happened with, you know, with representatives of the hotel developers, they have, you know, the county commission at the same time saying, we are going to appeal, first of all, the DOA decision, because Lourdes won two cases, if you really wanted to count it. She had the Florida Department of Administrative Hearings case, which she won back in, I believe, the spring, I believe around April. And then she had the court case that she won in August. And so during the, when she won her earlier decision, the county commission had to authorize the county attorney to appeal that decision from the Department of Administrative Hearings. And at the time, the county commissioner said things like, you know, we owe this to see it all the way for vested stakeholders, talking about, I believe, the hotel developers.
That's
And
usually when they're talking about stakeholders, they're usually talking about the developers. Yeah.
but so you had the county commission's directive, the coming down from, you know, they're supposed to be the leaders of policy, right? You have them saying back, you know, and, you know, before this hotel stuff was public, saying we're going to appeal it, we're going to fight it, you know. And it wasn't, you know, after the decision, you didn't have them say anything after in August. It wasn't until several months later when they were in, you know, they basically approved what the county attorney wanted on, you know, with, you know, repealing the UDC amendment that allowed the hotel order. They didn't speak or discuss then. The only time you really saw them talk about whether or not to go forward with the privately initiated Comprehensive Plan Amendment wasn't until, I believe, either late October or early November. And so to me, it was looking at that disconnect of the county commission is saying one thing, and you have the county. And so that's where I started looking at all the records. And there was also other really interesting emails in there, and only, could spotlight a couple of them. But it was a lot of communication, and oftentimes you would see, planning staff, setting up meetings. And well,
Well,
setting up meetings doesn't sound
I want to
anything
stop
wrong.
you right now
Right.
because I think we need to, well, first of all, many people who don't pay any attention to county government, but then something is going on in their backyard. That's usually how most people get involved. And I can't tell you how many times people have said, this feels like a done deal. I go to the meeting, I give my input. Maybe they're looking at you, maybe they're not looking at you. A lot of them say they're not even looking at me. It's like the cake is already baked, and I'm there giving this input, and it doesn't seem to matter. I just want to walk through the gist of your article. You basically uncovered a large set of emails, 900, 1100, which is a massive amount of emails to have to comb through. And I've done that. And the amount of time it takes, it's hours and hours and hours. And that, it's worth supporting local journalism because honestly, these investigations just, they're not easy to do and they require manpower and time. But you talk about a telecommunications tower decision. You talk about a developer roundtable decision. And you've already touched on the hotels and the next steps. So, can you tell us about the telecommunications tower? And Charlie Bailey was the land use attorney that was communicating with county staff. Very responsive back and forth between the county and Mr. Bailey. He and Charlie Bailey is the son of Dan Bailey. They are with the Williams Parker Law Firm, and Dan, his dad, did this kind of work, and now Charlie is doing it. So tell us.
Yeah. So they were doing a dual, they had two things working side by side. They had obviously the application to get the, what it would turned out to be a telecommunications tower to somewhere for Waterside Place, a development in Lakewood Ranch, one of their first Sarasota County residential developments. And so they had that working alongside, but they needed some to modify part of the a part of the telecommunications ordinance tool. And it's a bunch of, and like I said, even though I've read these emails, it is a very complicated area of law.
Well,
And
there's
what's interesting.
a lot of jargon, but essentially this was looking at habitat protection, where there was no intention to have a cell phone tower in a conservation area, right?
Well, that were there. So the telecommunications ordinance is interesting. I was talking to one of my sources about this particular one to make sure I got it all right. And they were very adamant that what they basically did was change the definition of open space through modifying the telecommunications ordinance. Now, I am not 100%, I didn't quote that person in my story. I didn't, have them saying that in the story that this right here, is something that should have been looked at through changing the definition of open space. But ultimately, back with the 2050 plan, you had things called villages and hamlets, and then there would be open space and preserved land and conserved land and all these different definitions. What, it was supposed to be like a transition from like what is like more dense area to less dense to, the
Right.
rural area, the keep the country country people, have their 5-acre farms, and they, they feel that encroachment from the surround, the continued expansion of what
Well,
is, regular
2050 plan
soda.
was not the 2050 plan was to prevent precisely what is happening, which are these gated communities, which are basically it's sprawl development. It is not environmentally friendly, and the 2050 plan was conceived to aggregate development and have some high density development, which I know a lot of people out east didn't even want that, but it was better because it had a lot of wildlife habitat, and there were real strict protections about things like putting a cell phone tower in a wildlife area.
Right. Well, so the def the changes to they were going back and forth, and it appears that David Pierce and Charlie Bailey had a sit down where they talked about what was currently in what they needed to change to make the cell phone tower that was going to go in on Waterside Place available and possible to build. And it seems, and so I'm not there at that meeting, and there's no record. There's, and it seems that a lot of these emails I have are just setting up face-to-face meetings. They're back and forth, and they're talking about, hey, when can we come by? Can we drop off some documents? And dropping off documents in today is kind of weird to me. I mean,
Yeah,
why? It seems the only
you
reason
email
why
them.
you would, right? The only
Yeah.
reason to drop documents off is to potentially make it harder to put a public records request in for things.
Well, it's not
But
only that. I've got to jump in. Then you get to talk to the person. Then you get to meet face to face. So, a citizen giving input at a meeting may have never, the commission and the county staff may have never laid eyes on that person before. But Bill Merrill and Charlie Bailey, and they're there all the time. And I like to say everybody's a nice guy. These are all nice people. If you,
yeah.
they're all nice people. That's not the point. But the relationship, right? The familiarity facilitates, getting things done.
Yeah. And I would say, just to be on the record, that, I've
Sure.
talked with Pat Neal and I've talked with Bill Merrill, and both of them see it completely different than the way that I'm describing or the way that you're describing these
Sure.
communications. That every time I talk to Pat or Bill, they seem to be extremely intelligent, and they have their point of view on land regulation. And so, I mean, I kind of can see some of what they're talking about with needing to have the communication. I think the issue comes when they are affecting not just their properties, but the rights of everyone around the properties when they're changing the telecommunication ordinance, when they are trying to
They're not
remove
the only
coastal
ones.
protections.
They're not the only ones with property rights. Yeah, essentially. So tell us about the developer roundtable, because well, let's finish up with the cell phone tower. So Charlie Bailey is emailing, is it Anna
Anna
Messina?
Messina, yeah, I believe that's how you say her name.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So yeah, he eventually that the Anna Messina is the planner assigned to this telecommunication ordinance issue, and she responds back that she has some concerns with some of the language in the in his proposed changes, some of the proposed changes. In particular, she points to potential violations of the comp plan. And at that point, Charlie does respond relatively quickly, saying, "Hey, what you're striking is completely defeats the purpose of what we're doing, pretty much." And basically says, demands to have a,
He
yeah,
responds
demands.
within 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was about
But,
8 minutes.
yeah. Okay, 8 minutes.
And he responds basically demanding to have a meeting. Or not demanding, but trying to immediately schedule, like immediately schedule. I'm coming down there today. We need to figure this out. And, to Charlie's, just to play devil's advocate for Charlie, that were there is probably what his clients want him to do. That is, I
Oh,
mean,
no doubt. He's working for them. Yeah.
right.
And of course
Which,
he is.
something that's going to hang up, construction of that cell phone tower is not going to be good for, his client. So he's immediately jumping on this, trying to
I mean,
get
his law
it.
firm's right down the street. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Yes.
But so he immediately reaches, responds, sets up a meeting. They have a meeting, and ultimately, they make a minor modification to what he had previously suggested. And it won't allow the new language won't allow towers and conserved or preserved land, but it will let communication towers in open space. Now, my understanding of the open space areas was that these were supposed to be like community parks. I wasn't here during 2050. That was not my, I wasn't around
Yeah,
in
well,
Sarasota.
I was there when they ripped it up, basically. I mean, we were trying, Lourdes and I, and there are a bunch of us who, it was kind of like a drive-by shooting in a way, the way that it was so quick. It was, and this kind of segues into the whole developer roundtable in the fall of 2013, prior to, if I believe 2050 was dismantled in the year 2014. That's my characterization of it. And prior to it going public, there were meetings with certain developers, Mr. Neal, Mr. Benderson, I believe, or his representatives, John Cannon Homes, the Turner Ranch folks. So the gist of your article is it's the same as what happened then. All of this was in the works, and then it was actually fast-tracked, didn't follow the usual process for something of that magnitude to be taken apart. So the cell phone tower, they found language that they were comfortable with that would allow the cell phone tower to be built. Tell me about the developer roundtable and when what was that? Because, it's a long article, but I'm sure you couldn't have put everything in there that you saw about that. What do you think is important that you saw in your research?
Well, honestly, on that one, that's everything I got. So the developer roundtable is my understanding is it's like seemingly an annual type meeting where the county reaches out directly to what is appears to be the largest, most influential developers in the area. There was invite and the invite list included Pat Neal, Carlos Baruff, Rick Severance with Welland Park, Carlos Baruff from Medallion Homes. And included a representative for Hugh Culverhouse Jr., the developer of Palmer Ranch. It included Rick's Jansen with Jensen with Lakewood Ranch. It also included Bill Merrill and Bo Medred, two big time local land use professionals.
Well, they're attorneys.
Well, I don't know if Bo Medred is. I believe Bo Medred is a planner.
He's a
But
consultant.
yeah, he's a planner. Bill Merrill is a land use attorney or real estate attorney. But yeah, I mean that was the the heavy hitters and from the local development community, they were invited to a meeting to talk about trends coming up for the next year.
So this is like in late 2023 or some annual gathering at the end of the year in prep for the following year.
Well, the email comes out went out on January 23rd, and they have the meeting appear apparently a couple months later. So it's like a notice to set aside of some time for everyone to get together to talk about. And the developers say that it's mostly process type stuff that's discussed. If that's the case, I would wonder why not just have that open to the public if it's just about issues with something called this new document intake system and like document system for the county called Excelsia, is what he said the most recent developer roundtable the key focus was.
Can I just say that all these folks have a pretty healthy staff that deals with the nuts and bolts of their paperwork. I have a hard time believing that Pat Neal and Carlos Baruff are meeting because of paperwork.
Yeah, I mean, when I talked to one of the other developers, they say that the comment was basically, you'd be bored to death if you came to this meeting. There was nothing really of point of note talked
I
about.
would love to go. I'm
I
gonna ask them
know.
if
And
I
all
could go.
right.
I won't be bored.
No, and they mentioned that, the developer I was talking to, one of the people that were invited. Oh, I forgot, Todd Mathis with Benderson Development was
Benderson
also
Development,
invited.
yeah.
Yeah.
All very nice people.
Yeah.
Everyone's a nice guy.
Yeah. Well, the people they one of the developers told me he hasn't even been to the last couple. So, it doesn't it, that's at least what they're telling me. So, it is to me, it just raises a concern. I mean, I don't know when the last time there was a community roundtable or a group of throughout the county, or who when the last time they had a, they have individual meetings with people like Becky Ietch, well, for the she's with Keep the Country Country, but she's also just an advocate for MIACA, for old MIACA.
She
And
is a very effective advocate for old MIACA. She really knows her planning stuff. I just want to remind everyone, if you just joined us, you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you. Thank you so much. And by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2023-24 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. My guest is reporter Derek Gillum. He is with the Sarasota Herald Tribune. He covers real estate and development in Sarasota County. He's written an excellent investigation that appeared this past Sunday in the Herald Tribune called Developers Have the Inside Track. And we've been talking about this annual, which you uncovered in your research, the Developer Roundtable. Derek, it used to be, and in fact, the city of Sarasota has an email portal where if an email is shared among a certain number of elected officials, it is automatically accessible on the public website. That used to be true in Sarasota County. It ended around the same time as the 2050 plan being gutted. It ended around 2013. And when Paul Caracciolo and Al Mayo were running, they were asked about it at Tiger Bay, and both of them said that they would be in favor of restoring it. Of course, it never was restored. And in fact, it's been the experience. I know Lourdes has shared this, that a lot of people who make public records requests, whereas before they were routinely handled and provided quickly, they have become more difficult to get information and more expensive. What was your experience in doing in gathering this information? Was it easy or inexpensive? What was your experience?
For me, it was pretty inexpensive because all the emails were paid for by the Sarasota News Leader, actually. Because I requested, my understanding is it was several hundred dollars for Mrs. Is it Hackney Brown or Brown?
Rachel Brown
Brown
Hackney.
Hackney. Rachel Brown
And
Hackney.
Robert
It was
Hackney is he's her husband. They both work at the paper.
a. Okay. And my understanding, it was a couple hundred dollars for them to get their records. Because I was following up, once a public record has been paid for, they can't charge you again for the same records.
Because
So, since,
it's this identical work that's already been done.
right, as it should be. And so I didn't have to pay anything for the records that were provided to me. I didn't have, they did make Matt Osterhout, the planning director, the director of planning and development services for the county. They did make him available to answer some questions as well. So, I mean, that for me, I have pretty good. I'm able to, I guess, get people to talk to me pretty easily.
Well, your paper is the big kahuna. So that helps.
Maybe that helps. I don't know. I
Yeah.
have been charged quite exorbitantly by other agencies in town
Have
for
you?
records, or at least attempted to get records. And then, working with some state agencies, the lead time on getting certain things. I'm still waiting on some records for more than a year and a half. I would
Really?
say, yeah, I mean,
Wow.
it's involving some FDLE investigations that I'm still waiting on the investigative reports, the actual, evidence of what they based their decision on.
Huh. That a
But
year and a half. That's amazing.
yeah, when I responded to them and asked them where my records were and like what was the, where I was in the lineup, they told me I was 991st in line. So, but
And I'm waiting on a records request too. That's somewhat, not, you remind me of this. You do make mention in your article of the Florida Gov Center for Government Accountability. This is Michael Barfield, who is no stranger to public records requests. And you report he paid a hefty fee. This The Florida Government Center for Government Accountability was quite expensive.
I'm not 100% sure on whether or not it's sometimes Michael's free agenting out there doing his own thing, and I'm
Okay.
not 100% sure whether that's a Florida government account. That's his position. He is the public
Okay.
access director for the Florida Center for Government Accountability.
But
But his lawsuit against
the
the
request might not have
request,
been made.
may
Okay.
not have been, but he has, and that the reason why I say that's because he has sued the county and the his
Yeah, I
government, the agency. The agency is not involved with the lawsuit, so I'm not sure if they're involved with the records request.
But he paid
The
over 2 grand, didn't
$2,100, yeah, for
he?
records, and he has a much more extensive records request where you cited 1,100 emails from Bill Merrill. That was according to his, he sent me a Excel spreadsheet of all the emails he received involving with either Bill Merrill CC'd on, sent to, or in some way interacted, invited to a meeting or something. Some way an email was sent to Mr. Merrill's inbox that were there. That was where the 1,100 number came from, was just the number of emails that he had from Barfield's record request, because he went much more extensive on his
Was
with,
can I ask 1100 emails within a certain time frame or around a certain
Yes,
subject? What were the parameters?
that was emails between five people at the county. One of them was Michelle Norton. Another one was Michelle Norton's assistant director of development. So she's underneath Matt Osterhout on the org chart. And so it was Michelle Norton. It was Jonathan Lewis, the county administrator. It was I'm blanking on one of the senior planners that was involved, but it was basically five people at the county, including the county attorney's office. So David Pierce was one of the people too. And a lot of those emails from Merrill, to Merrill's defense, I guess, were emails involving Siesta Key Hotel litigation. And at the time, I believe Merrill was, at least the developers were intervening on the litigation involving the hotels, and he was getting back and forth updates where they were sharing information about that right there. So there was a lot of emails where it's like, here's the filing for this, basically a filing in the court case. Here's what's happening. That was, I'm not exactly sure exactly what Barfield's doing with those records, but he has requested them. And he also requested text messages and phone records for Jonathan Lewis and his, all those people as well. And it does appear that the his issue with the cost involved was the text messages. Because they had to, according to his complaint with the circuit court, Barfield had to pay for Jonathan Lewis to go through the text messages to find out where all, what county records may be in his text messages.
But I don't understand that because it's Lewis's obligation to be putting his text messages into the public record.
That is the basis of Barfield's suit on the excessive cost of the records
Yeah, I
that
mean
they should be
that's his
archiving.
burden, right? That's his burden. So the thing about this is, Derek, for those who have watched, a very, what I would characterize as a huge imbalance in terms of whose interests are responded to, whose interests are prioritized. Of course, Bill Merrill and Charlie Bailey, this is the job that they're doing for various clients, right? Not just one, I'm sure. Mr. Neal, this is for his business. Mr. Baruth, this is for his business. Benderson, Rex Jensen. But the thing is, and so I don't know that they need defending. It's the commission and the county that is, swear an oath. I mean, commissioners anyway. And certainly the county staff, by all appearances, works for them in terms of their responsiveness. And that would only happen if the culture at the county, which is, the commission is responsible for, is developer oriented, which it appears to be if you're having this round table. I don't know why that would be necessary. We as taxpayers are paying for everybody's time. We're paying the pensions of these commissioners. You've got residents who bought into a rural lifestyle, which is supposed to be protected by the comp plan, right? That is in the comp plan that we're going to have a rural lifestyle. And yet, popping up all around these 5-acre homesteads are now going to be gated communities. It's just at the beginning of really what's to come, barring some kind of real estate market change, which I don't know, maybe that could happen. This is lobbying. I mean, this is it. It's interesting to me. We had a city commissioner talking about lobbyists registering, and for the benefit of the commission, to so that they knew. I don't see it, and that is a whole nother topic of the motivation for that, which you and I have talked about before. But with regard to what's going on at the county, I think these guys need to register, and their representatives. There should be a list every time they go in there, signing in, because the public has a right to know the magnitude of the lobbying that's going on and who is doing it and how much of the time that we pay for this county staff to serve us is actually being devoted to find these workarounds to put a cell phone tower in a wildlife habitat or to, have a developer roundtable and give them all a heads up about what's happening. For me, it's backwards. I just see where's the public interest? And at the very least, your reporting uncovers it, but don't, it's like Jonathan Lewis charging for the archiving of his text messages, which is his obligation, supposed to be happening anyway. Why in the world is this happening? And we as a public have trouble finding out about it. It's so backwards. That's my take.
No, and I definitely, the first paragraph of the story is that we are trying to put a spotlight on this topic. I've still tried to be very fair, and right now we
I
don't
think
have
you were
Bill
very.
Merrill. I'm talking about even in this setting right here, we don't have Bill Merrill or Charlie Bailey on to defend themselves. Not maybe that's fine, but I'm just, it, we as a paper do recognize
But here's
that.
the thing. I want to stop you. I don't think they have to defend themselves. They're doing what they're paid to do by a client. Isn't it the county's job to be justifying these practices? Isn't it the commission's job really to be explaining this culture and how it serves the public? That, Bill Merrill, he's doing what they let him do. So,
Yeah, no, I mean, you have a very good point, and maybe a blind spot in my story where I did not fully go into accountability on the county's part, and that may be something I need to look into more. So.
Well, I think your story's great. I find no flaw with your story. I just think it's very, and you know, this is a things don't happen in a vacuum. There's a culture involved here. You know, I know a lot of people work, their livelihood is tied to development in one way or another. Maybe they're a tradesman, they're doing plumbing, they're doing AC, and their perception is, I don't want to rock this boat, or they're a realtor. You know, so there's just a culture in place here where, you know, when I would give talks about dark money, and we'll be doing some more of those in the coming months, I ask people, can you name your five county commissioners? And these are people who are going to a talk on local government. And I can tell you out of 100 people in the room, two hands might go up, maybe three, but the buck stops with them, you know. You did talk to one former county commissioner, John Thaxton. Yeah. Can you share what John Thaxton had to say about the 2050 plan and how he feels about that decision looking back?
Yeah, he's called it a Trojan horse and the worst decision he made in his 16 years adjudicating land use. And it's something that he deeply regrets. He's been holding talks, not just to me, but public talks as well, where he lays out his issues with the 2050 plan and how what he views as the protective covenants and community-initiated covenants of that plan, how they've been removed or stripped from the plan, and how all the development intensities and densities have been honored or increased was basically what we talked about. He couldn't fully remember whether or not there was a developer roundtable when he was county commissioner, but he does it does ring it rang a true to him as something that he thought what was going on even back in 2012, but prior to 20, the 2050 plan.
It definitely happened prior to the public unveiling of dismantling the 2050 plan. That was established. And I think that may have been the genesis, if not the genesis, it was certainly near the beginning of those developer roundtables. You know, one of the things, because Pat Neal, it was striking to me in of all people, Pat Neal, a former legislator who became a developer when he left the legislature. He was talking about, because development is such a highly regulated industry, there's all this communication. And the thing is, there's this Burt-Harris Act, which I don't really have time to go into, but this is about property rights for developers. And so, why are these decisions made? It's because they have property rights. When really, by definition, if they have to go through a hearing process, they aren't actually entitled to a yes, no matter what they do. They actually have to meet certain standards. Now, if they meet the standards, yes, they should get the approval. My issue with Mr. Neal, and he knows this, is the amount of money that is put into elections by Mr. Neal, by Mr. Baruff, by Mr. Benderson, by Mr. Jensen, not just campaigns, but political committees, is so grossly out. There's no can't we used to have rules, and you know, even the state legislature has preempted local campaign finance restrictions on county commission races to donations of $200. In the city, you had to be an actual human being to donate the $200. That wasn't true in the county. Now it's $1,000. And the city, you know, you can be a company now and you can give $1,000. And then there are dark money political committees. So Mr. Neal has used his wealth to rig the game in his favor. Bottom line, that's how I see it, and I'm happy to defend that. And you know, he knows, I think, that they all know I write about that and I think that. So we're not talking about a level playing field, and the built environment is not a free market. because public investment is always involved. They need roads, they need sewers, they need schools, the police have to come, the fire have to get all of that. And so we're supposed to have a commission in place that looks at the infrastructure investments and makes decisions that optimize our investments. And I just don't see that happening at all. I
Yeah.
just see them rubber stamping what these guys want, mitigating an impact fee, which is only the upfront portion cost, and then building in a way which doesn't generate enough tax, property taxes, to actually pay for the life of the infrastructure. It's like so upside down. Like I always say, they're all nice guys, but this is as I see it, a very corrupt culture and model, which is facilitating not very imaginative or smart development. It's just the same old strip malls and gated communities.
Yeah. Well, I do believe that, the premise of the story is this unlevel playing field that you're talking about. The premise is what I'm writing about is, from my viewpoint and looking at these records, how the county influences public policy. And, whether or not they should be, is that's definitely a question that we should definitely be raising concerns about. And that's what I believe the story is attempting to do, is say, hey, here's how it's happening. And, this is right now, everything I saw, it doesn't seem to be anything's happening is illegal.
No, it's not illegal.
It's not illegal at all. It's
Nope.
very much the way the business has been done. It's just, in my opinion, and from the story, the number of contacts seems to be heavily weighed in favor of, development interests currently. So,
Yeah, to your question, where is the community roundtable?
yeah, the community roundtable, or are there other ways the building and zoning department reaches out? They note, that there are required community workshops, but those are events put on exclusively by the developer, and there is, no communication from the staff during those. So what you get is you get the developer's point of view and, how they want to frame the project. But where is the community person that's trying to, like, hey, here's our view of what's happening? And there, it doesn't seem to be much communication, like, coming from the county to the community. Seems like
No.
it's a lot of communication between developers and the county, and there's less of it. And, just to give them their say on that, the county does say they are willing to meet with anyone. And I did see some evidence in the emails where Becky and, another one of a real estate, Becky Ietch, and another, local former county attorney also, who now works with the Keep the Country people, they were involved, and they had some communication there. Not nearly the level of what was going on with Mr. Merrill and Charlie Bailey and the other.
I mean, the community doesn't know what they don't know. What often prompts the community to get involved is when something's going to change. And if the person that or the entity or the company that is originating that change has a 6 month or 1 year or longer head start talking to the county staff before there's ever a notion out there that something's going to change. That by definition, which I think is one of the reasons why requiring some kind of gatekeeping document to show why they're there and what the topic is, I don't know, might be useful. I'm to see them as the lobbyists that they are. That
It's possible. I mean, I don't know. I'm not right now on the,
I know
haven't
you.
talked to solutions. I have not,
No, you're
went
just
for.
you're the reporter. Listen, it's great work, and it was a collaboration. I know our local journalism is so important. Nobody else is going to do this kind of investigation, but for a local paper. or local radio station. So between you and your work, Derek, which I so appreciate, and Rachel Brown Hackney, she writes terrific articles about what's going on. I want to encourage my listeners, thank you all for supporting this station. But we need to support the work of our local journalists. No one else is going to do this for us. It's a community effort. We need to value and appreciate and pay for the work that you do. It's not free. So I just want to say kudos for you and your colleagues for doing this. And please keep it up because we need it. We need to know what's happening. So Derek, Gillum, thanks so much. I hope you'll come back and talk about, more of what you're covering in the future.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kathy, and best of luck, everyone, everything. So, thank you very, very much for having me.
Absolutely. And everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. Programming at WSLR is supported by listeners like you and by Ringling College Galleries and Exhibitions. Ringling College's 2023-24 exhibition season features art from Ringling students, alumni, faculty, and nationally recognized artists from a wide range of mediums and from diverse backgrounds. More information is available at ringlingcollege.gallery. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.